This is an ABC podcast. Resorts, homes and the newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream.
You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia, and this week we've also got Jeremy Guao from the Solomon Islands. Hello, Jeremy, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Fred. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem at all. Thanks for doing this. We really appreciate it. You are listening to Pacific Prepared. This is a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how these things are all connected, and you're going to hear that through stories from right across the Pacific.
Each week we work with local reporters. They are on the ground letting us all know what's happening in the space and what people want to hear.
On today's show, preparing for natural disasters in Solomon Islands, but with a focus on people living with a disability.
Also, even though parts of the Pacific Islands have soaked recently, there's some parts that are actually in drought. More on that soon.
And going deep underwater, how some of those cooler temperatures are actually helping to protect some coral reefs at the moment.
And that's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
Jeremy, you've got a story this week from one of the outer islands in Solomon Islands. Now, for someone who's listening who's never heard of Savo Island before, which is where we're talking about, can you fill me in? Where is it exactly?
Thanks, Fred. Well, Savo Island is just an hour ride away from Honiara, the capital city of Honiara, and it's quite a small island in the central province.
So you have to catch a boat to get there, is that right?
Yes, you have to catch a boat, go, and then probably it's around 1 hour, 45 minutes, yeah. Yeah, just ride out to from Honiara to... Yeah, that's Savo Island.
And so what are the sort of risks out on Savo Island in terms of natural disasters?
Well, Savo Island is known for its vulnerability when it comes to volcano. The island is made up of volcano. And yeah, it's quite a, has a lot of impacts back then. But then now that they faced a little bit of changes, they faced... They started to experience changes of, you know, they feel like Savo Island is quite a bit shaky often, but yeah, they face something like that, changes there. But it is quite vulnerable when it comes to climate change because it's quite small. It's not that big. And yeah, around 13 communities, I would say, in that island. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So there's quite a few people living there then too.
There's quite a good number of people living there, around 800 or something, around 800 to 1,000 plus people. But most of them are in the mainland, like Honiara. Yeah.
Right, okay. And so, and Savo Island, there is obviously, there's a volcano on the island as well, which hasn't erupted for a long time, but there has been some activity on the island though with the volcano, hasn't there, recently?
Yes, Fred, like I said, they've been faced, you know, experienced some changes at the moment. A couple of years ago, they've experienced extreme heat with the streams and then, you know, plants that have, you know, garden and stuff like that. They have been facing changes. There's no good healthy, I would say, that, you know, when it comes to... gardening, they're facing like changes of.
So they're struggling to grow their own produce.
With the changes of the heat. Yeah.
Jeremy, what's your story about this week?
So basically, this week's story, I bring you the heart of Savo. Just when it comes to disability, there's around 100 plus disability living on that island. Like I said, it's 13 community, I would say. There's hundreds of, there's hundreds of people estimated to live with disability in that island. And when it comes to volcano, you know, this need to be sort of like a plan in place, prepare for any possible disruption or eruption, when it comes to that volcano. Because like I said, it's quite a change, because the last time we had was probably 80s. And then scientists also mentioned that it's going to be another eruption expected, you know, in 20 plus years. So I'm bringing up, like, for my story this week, it's all about disability when it comes to preparedness, how they're going to do it. And, you know, like I said, the people with disability, when it comes to like inclusion of, you know, plans and sort of they get neglected or not included. And the story is basically on how people with disability, Solomon Islands, making an inclusion of having a preparedness plan for people with disability in Savo Island. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, let's take a listen.
My name is Watson Marley, and I'm from Temotu Province in the Solomon Islands. I'm currently working with people with disabilities, Solomon Islands. My role is program manager, and also my additional work, I also look after the UN Women project on women resilience to disaster.
All right, I understand that Savo is just an hour boat ride away from Honiara. Just coming from curiosity, why is that the project focus mostly, you know, for Savo Island, hence that we have a couple of islands in Central Province, but the focus is mainly on Savo Island. Anything interesting?
Yeah, well, when we thought about the project at the first place, when we applied for the proposal, we thought about people with disabilities on Savo Island, and also because of the vulnerability to the risk of volcano on that island. Savo is a volcanic island, and it has an active volcano, but in the previous years, I think around some years ago, there was a big eruption, and we also are expecting, we will be expecting an eruption, and that's one focus that we want to do this project on that island. And it's mainly based on early warning system. So we will run some activities related to disaster, resilience to disaster, including early warning system. And our thinking is to install some early warning systems on those communities, 13 communities, and thinking about different disabilities, it doesn't mean we will only install one type of early warning system. For example, we will not only install the color coding or the flag where it indicates if it's green color, then it's a normal time, no disaster, but it's orange, it's a warning that there is a disaster. But we also consider other disabilities like the blind. So the blind will not see the color coding, but they will depend on like a bell or something that they can hear. And also other disabilities we will also consider in those early warning system. One thing we consider along that is on messaging in phones. So when the meteorological service releases a message, it will go directly to those people with disabilities, and their caregivers will also help them in receiving those messages or transmitting those messages to those people with disabilities.
Savo Island is just a small island, like I said, but then it has a lot of communities around, probably more than 10 communities. But then, coming from disability point of view, how's that gonna be possible when it comes to, you know, you know, working with the community, working with the disability people in the community? How's that going to be like?
Yeah, thank you, Jeremy. When we did the first training, it was like a new message to the participants. Like they never heard about disability or the rights of people with disability before. But when we did that training, it's like an eye-opening to them. And they started to realize, oh, we always treat people with disabilities as they are nobody, but they have their own rights and they are also important to be considered during disaster. We have the human rights and they are part of the human rights. So we have to consider them.
But when we talk about inclusion when it comes to disaster and, you know, climate change, hence we have Savo Island is much vulnerable to this volcanic, vulnerable to, you know, this well-known volcanic island. How do you think that this project gonna work for Savo Island?
Yeah, thank you. We identified all the communities in Savo Island because we want to go down directly to where people with disabilities live. And that's where we're gonna hear from what they need or what they want. So it's like we don't determine the activities or the actual program, but we have to listen to what they said or what they want. So that when we do the project, like providing the trainings, they are not like duplicated trainings that other projects or other organizations already done there. But we want to complement. We also want to complement other projects there. So in addition to Savo, there is also, during the first training, we also did training on Gela Island. So because considering the time frame and the resources in the project, in the funds, for example, we think that we can concentrate on one island, like Savo Island, and we did the training on Gela just to train them on how they can influence programs or activities in the communities. For example, what we encouraged them on Gela was if there is a project or program coming into the communities, you have the you should influence that program to be disability inclusive. For example, if there is a program on developing a disaster community in the community, you have to influence them. Like you have to tell the community that, oh, we should have people with disability representative in that committee, so that when the needs arises, people with disability voice are also represented in that committee. So those are some examples on the inclusion of persons with disabilities.
Thank you. With coming from the case that you've been down on the ground in Savo Island, you see what's the situation like, especially for people with disability, and you know what's the environmental aspect of it, volcano, climate change. How do you think this disaster ready program will be efficient? Hence that we have this changing of climate.
We also are in that project or program. We also intend to establish a committee or a major committee in on Savo Island, where like it's a disaster ready committee where we can have the focal person there. And when anything arises like disaster, that person can contact others, other communities immediately. And for example, there will be also, for example, in times of volcanic eruption, that person will also have contacts with the focal person, will also have contact with other boat OBM owners around Savo, so that when things like eruption arise, those boat owners or those groups will be alerted so that they can evacuate people as soon as possible. So those are some plans under this project.
Yeah. When it comes to Savo Island, do you think that we should do more for Savo Island, hence that it's quite vulnerable apart from other islands?
Yes. And
when it comes to disability, sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's where we also have to involve the Ministry of Meteorology, Climate Change and Disaster Management in the process, because they are the one who have expertise on that area, and we have to consult them on what's the real, what will be the potential main disasters on the island. So from there, then they can also advise us on how we can frame our programs according to the needs of those who are on the island in on Savo.
And thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter Jeremy Guao for that story from Solomon Islands.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
Jeremy, I'm sure you're aware that parts of the Pacific recently have had actually had huge amounts of rain. Like they've been, you know, they've been raining. It's been raining there for months on end in some places. What's it been like in the Soles recently in terms of the rain that you've had there?
Exactly. We have a couple of rains. We experienced rain over the few weeks, and now still we have rains. Yeah.
Yeah. And have you had any flooding or?
Yeah, we've had a few floodings, but not that extreme as the ones we experienced. Yeah. But it's April.
Yeah.
We experience rain in this season. Yeah. Especially
sort of,
April.
Yeah.
Yeah. Usually.
April. I guess it's still cyclone season, so you're sort of ready for that, right?
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's kind of hard to believe, but some parts of the Pacific are actually in drought. They need rain desperately, like they're really low on water. They're having pallet loads of water shipped in, like lots of bottled water, that kind of thing. So they're really desperate for rain at the moment. And that's exactly, you know, and we're talking about the areas around sort of Marshall Islands and Palau and that sort of direction. So not, I guess, in the north. East of Solomon Islands, I suppose it would be. Sorry, the northwest of Solomon Islands.
West of Solomon Islands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. This is what ABC Radio Australia's Pacific Beat program has been looking into recently.
Many residents in Yap State's outer islands have had to ration their drinking water for months.
The grass is crispy, they said. They are now down to about a few more days of water. On one island, Falalop.
John Rulmal is a community leader from Falalop Island on Ulithi Atoll, who's currently in Guam to organize more aid for his community.
It's alarming or disturbing or scary to me because Falalop being the larger one with a little bit more excess, you know, having the high school and the air terminal there. So if they're reporting that they're down to that much, then the rest of the more remote outer island within just the atoll is probably in dire need right now.
He says the last water delivery to his community was too small. The last drop was 360 liters for his community of 350 people.
They're getting creative on rationing from what I can hear. It's alarming. It's a little disturbing.
Mr. Rulmal says it's unclear when the next water delivery will be. He says the water distribution is not always working, with some smaller islands receiving even less. He's concerned about the most vulnerable in his community.
The grandmothers who will not drink because there's very little water and it's going to go to their grandchild. Those are the members that I'm nervous about now. Elders and chiefs will start to prioritize their vulnerable members of their communities And that's scary to me because they won't say anything. It's just, it's not cultural. We don't complain about food.
Water is being delivered in small plastic bottles, which will cause issues with rubbish disposal in the longer term. Mr. Rulmal says it would be better if it came in large tanks, along with reverse osmosis machines. The area is in a state of emergency. Meanwhile, UNICEF's water specialist for the Northern Pacific, Jeffrey Ng, says the situation is critical in parts of Yap.
Now almost 90% of their rainwater tanks are empty, and the government has sent some water to the island to help the people in the outer island. But now the situation is getting worse once they reach the extreme. So even in the main island, people on the main island already start having problem to have access to water.
He says officials have been distributing water, but it might not be enough in some areas.
The last distribution, the government has provided like half a liter per person per day that is going to last them for 3 to 4 months. Of course, we all aware of that this number is still not sufficient because definitely people will need more than that.
Mr. Ng says UNICEF is planning to send some large water containers from Fiji. The U.S. Coast Guard is also sending help from Guam. While that is being managed, some residents have had to deal with diarrhea from drinking contaminated water. Others report respiratory issues. Mr. Rulmal says potential food shortages are also a worry, with trees and food gardens getting drier by the day.
Banana is the first one to show signs of lack of water, right? And it's now kind of falling down.
Parts of Marshall Islands are also experiencing extremely dry conditions. Disaster management officials there have delivered drinking water and filters to affected communities. Weather forecaster Landon Adlett says some minor showers might give some relief to affected communities, but it won't be enough to help with the water shortages.
Currently, we are looking at the ongoing drought steadily worsening because we're just not seeing the rainfall across northern Yap State and the Federated States of Micronesia and the northern Marshall Islands. Yap State, that remains a hot spot with significant drought ongoing.
Fires are also a danger, with a few burning in Yap last week. Parts of Guam are also experiencing dry conditions, and Mr. Adlett, who works with a local weather service, says there's also a fire danger there.
We're still here. We do have days with the red flag warnings, which means that there's extreme fire danger, and that's based on the ongoing dry conditions and the stronger gusty winds.
Palau is also monitoring a dry spell and has called on its people to conserve water. Major rain is forecast, but not until June for the worst affected areas.
Thanks to ABC Radio Australia's reporter Dubrovka Volida for that story. And it's very difficult to imagine that some of these countries are so desperate for rain, and yet others, like in the Seoul's, Jeremy, have had a lot of it recently.
True.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Hey, Jeremy, do you know much about coral bleaching at all?
Yeah, for us in the Solomon Islands, basically, you know, scientists have identified a widespread of coral bleaching events on Salau, you know, in offshore reefs that had been previously thought of being, you know, less reactive to climate stress. And also it impacted reefs, you know, with from observations during the recent underwater media monitoring. So, yeah, basically we have scientists have recorded coral bleaching for Maravo Lagoon in the Western Province and also some parts of, you know, Solomon Islands, I would say, but mostly in the Western Province.
Yeah, so are coral reefs something that people go and visit when they go to Solomon Islands, or is that sort of like a, you know, are they quite well known in Solomon Islands?
It's quite a well-known thing to Solomon Islands, but, you know, when it comes to scientific terms like coral bleaching, you have to, you know, explain a bit, and then probably people will understand. Yeah, it's quite a scientific term. Coral bleaching, it's quite, scientific. People yet to understand what's coral bleaching. Even for climate change, they notice the, you know, sea level rise, but then they still yet to understand what's the problem of this one, and then what's the problem of they yet to differentiate what's coral bleaching and sort of like that. Yeah.
Well, again, this is something that ABC Radio's Pacific Beat has been looking into, and Dr. Jennifer McWhorter, she's an oceanographer who works for the US National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, which is a massive title to have. But Dr. McWhorter has also basically said for now that rising sea temperatures aren't affecting coral at the bottom of the ocean, but that might only be temporary.
We've found that bottom temperatures between 30 and 50 meters can be better off while the surface is warming in certain locations of the Great Barrier Reef, only up until we hit 3 degrees of global average warming. And then those bottom temperatures will also experience warming that could threaten coral reefs.
So that means that if we go to deeper waters, we don't see the bleaching occurring that we see in more shallow water?
That's right. So potentially. So we quantify a stratification metric, kind of like that feeling of when you dive into a body of water and you swim to the bottom and it's cooler on the bottom. It's that same effect. And so we quantified that in a computer simulation. And so there are areas wherein the surface is warm, the bottom is still remaining cool, but we lose that reprieve at a certain threshold of global average warming.
So have these deeper waters areas been studied before?
In short, not really. And this is what Dr. McWhorter said.
The unique thing that we bring is looking at the climate projections in this level of detail and using this metric as a conceptual tool in an oceanographic setting to give us an idea of spatially and temporally when warming can potentially hit these deeper locations.
Thanks to ABC Radio Australia's reporter Dubrovka Volina for that story.
Well, look, Fred, thanks for having me on the show. Today we have an interesting talk. We covered a lot around drought and also coral bleaching, and for us in the Solomon Islands, basically on disability. So, yeah, it's quite an interesting one. Yeah, thanks, Fred.
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground. Thanks so much for coming on the show this week, Jeremy. We really appreciate it. Look forward to hearing your stories again soon. This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. And from Solomon Islands, Takeo Tumas. And Tumas to Jeremy Guao for stepping in this week. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.